Can you hear me well? Okay, welcome to this session. This session is going to be special. It's not coming from a single speaker, but from several partners and several solutions. But we thought that it would be great to talk about their solutions as well. My name is Cesar de la Torre. I work for Microsoft for the Visual Studio and .NET team marketing area. And here you have my email in case you want to ask any question. And the idea of this session is when you are creating business applications, we are used to create them using established application patterns and the typical technologies and technologies and approaches we use for running the business, right? And depending on what kind of application you're building, could be small, medium business applications or large mission critical business applications. Probably your application will fall within one or the other bucket, or maybe in between. But the Microsoft vision we have is whether you have your current business applications nowadays, we need to modernize those applications to using the emerging application patterns, which are most of all about mobility, mobile devices, and taking advantage of the cloud and elastic cloud. The idea is to extend your foundational business applications to new experiences and reaching new customers and having a direct connection with the customer, and also extending your on-premises infrastructure to the cloud. And when we are talking about new user experiences and new devices, those devices can be any kind. Could be Windows devices or could be non-Microsoft devices. So in that area, HTML and JavaScript is going to play an important role, but also sometimes you might want to create native applications for those devices. And you might want to reuse also your .NET code and et cetera. So we're going to talk about those different approaches and solutions coming from Microsoft partners. So is it going? Yeah. So let me introduce you Federico from Mobilize.net. So the Mobilize solution is basically going to help you to modernize your applications to web applications on different scenarios. He's going to talk now.
Thank you, Cesar. I'm actually here today to tell you, you know, a very sad story about an application that has been serving its company for a long, long time, and now it's getting older, and it just cannot learn any new and the new tricks as fast as, you know, the new guys. So once upon a time, we had this application that was created for your company, and it was providing a certain level of value for it. Through time, you know, the application has gone through several maintenance revisions. It has even been enhanced. You know, new modules have been added, more functionality, and now it has a certain value for the application. But we are at a crossroad. You know, this application has been written for technologies that are no longer, you know, mainstream. You know, maybe they're just getting out of support. Maybe, you know, they're very difficult to connect to the web. They're very difficult to connect to the cloud. So you have to make a decision. You know, you can either just let it die, and eventually this application is going to just stop providing value for your business. Or you can transform it, you can enhance it, and you can really inject new life into the application. And of course, you know, this, our little application is not alone in the world. You know, there are thousands and thousands of applications written for all technologies. I'm just mentioning two here. You know, if you think about Windows XP, you know, which is almost at the end of life, and certainly Visual Basic 6, which is also at the end of life, are two examples of applications or of where, you know, the fact that applications are built using those technologies is not allowing them to evolve and to move forward. you know, there are many companies like Gartner that says that there are still billions and billions of lines of code of VB6. You know, a recent study in the UK says that 85% of companies still have VB6 in their applications. And remember that the VB6 environment or the VB6 IDE is not even supported in Windows 7. Sure, the runtime works, but what's going to happen to these applications? What's going to happen to all of the third-party components that they're using, you know, when you're trying to move them, you know, to the web, to the cloud, to the mobile? So what to do, how to approach the problem, right? We are at a crossroad, and we can decide whether we transform them, whether we rewrite them, whether we just replace them and put them to sleep. And how can you make a decision about this? You know, here are a couple of variables that you can take into consideration. And you have to think of this as your portfolio of applications. So there may not be a single answer for all of your applications. You know, you have to look at each one of them. And you have to think about the business value they provide. You know, is this an application that I can just buy off the shelf and use it? Or is this an application that has some custom value for my business? Something that is not as easy, you know, to replace with an off-the-shelf application. And what about the technical quality of the application? Maybe it's an application that was written, I don't know, 20 years ago, and I really cannot understand the code. But that's not the case normally, because, I mean, these applications are live. You know, every day, you know, they're maintained, somebody's making changes to them. And so typically the applications that are running my business are of a decent technical quality, and they must have some sort of custom value for my business. So if that is the case, then a migration or a transformation is something that, that is possible. It's something that you should be considering as part of your evolution plans. There's also another variable that is not depicted here, which is, you know, how fast is my application changing? Sometimes, you know, I've seen applications that are just there, you know, and the last time somebody changed it was 10 years ago, because it's a business process that is so cemented into the organization that it doesn't change. So the application just works, okay? So in that case, all you have to do is make sure that the application is compliant. Remember, you know, there's Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, there's, you know, HIPAA, HITECH, you know, all these regulations that tell you that if you run applications on an unsupported technology, you know, you might be getting in trouble. So maybe you can just transform them and keep the functionality as is. On the other hand, you know, if the application is actually evolving very fast, you also have to make sure that it's transformed into a technology that you can continue to evolve, that you can continue to manipulate, for which you have developers available, you know, to make changes. And this is exactly, you know, some of the options that you have. You know, you can either do a manual rewrite for this application. Remember, this is an application that is providing value to the business. If you're telling me that the application is not providing value to the business, then, you know, just kill it and that's it. No, but this is an application that is providing value to the business. The functionality that it implements is important to the business. So what do you do? Do you rewrite it? Do you buy some package software and some off-the-shelf package software? And of course, you know, if you rewrite it, we all know what are the statistics of new project implementations, right? You know, a lot of large projects, you know, fail when trying to replicate functionality that is already working in the system. Because you have to remember that you have all the users that are trained, right? You have to remember that, yes, you know, my new application, even an off-the-shelf one, maybe it implements the same functionality, but it certainly does not implement it in the same way. So there's retraining costs. There is potential errors, you know, for whatever it does different. And all those things are not part of the IT budget, but, you know, they should be considered when making a decision. Of course, you can continue to keep running the legacy application forever. But then, you know, what happens again to the regulatory problems that you may have? You know, you have to make sure that your applications are compliant and not only running, which is sometimes what we wish, you know, we could do. Just make sure that, you know, my server here, you know, that runs the application, you know, hopefully nothing happens to it and it can continue to run forever. But that's not the case. And of course, you know, especially when you come from a VB6 world. And sometimes, you know, you think of VB6 as, you know, yes, those little applications, but I mean, I've seen, you know, huge banks and enterprises running their core systems on VB6. But sometimes, you know, those applications were homegrown, right? So they came from a business, from a line of business portion of the company and not from IT. And therefore, you know, they didn't implement all the best practices in terms of application, you know, evolution and maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. So cloud is certainly an option. I mean, if you can take it, put it into the cloud, then you can resolve a lot of the issues with maintainability. And then automated code conversion, which is what we're going to talk about, you know, moving forward. At mobilize.net, you know, we've been doing this for almost 20 years, and we've been helping companies make the transition from old platforms to new platforms. And we've developed tools and methodologies to help you with this process. We're going to see a tool demo in a little bit. Let me tell you about the methodology first. So first of all, you have to start with a migration blueprint. You have to make sure that you understand what is the environment. Even if it seems very simple, you know, I just want to migrate this, you know, from XP, I don't know, to Windows 8, you know, but there are lots of implications, a lot of external connections, a lot of external components, and you have to make sure that all of those things are mapped. So we have a blueprint process and assessment to determine, you know, exactly what do you want to achieve with the application. Then we have we make sure that we get the source code in a replicable environment, and you wouldn't believe how hard that is. Sometimes, again, you know, these applications are running in the business, but when you ask them, okay, give me an environment, a separate environment with this application running on its own. I mean, believe me, no, sometimes it's very, very hard to get. So you get that, and then we go through the process that I'm going to demo in a little bit, where, you know, through the use of automatic tools and a methodology, you know, you make the changes, you transform the application, and you're sure that you can get something that is functionally equivalent on the other hand. Of course, there's a lot of some manual touch-up, and then several phases of testing in the process. Okay? So what I'm going to show you is something that takes an old VB6 application, it moves it to .NET, and then it moves it to the web. VB6 is just an example. Think of the generic process that you can use for your own applications. So let's start with a Visual Basic 6 application. So here I have my solution. No, sorry. This one. So you saw that error, right? You know, this is VB6 running on Windows 8, which is supposedly it should not happen. So let me just show you the application first. This is just a simple line of business application. I can, I don't know, manage some customers. You know, here I have some customers. You know, I can create an invoice. You know, I have some customers. I can, you know, filter, etc. Right? Very, very, very typical. You know, I have an about anything, right? And if you look at it, you know, from the code perspective, you know, I have a bunch of forms here, like the customer forms here, right? That has a lot of code behind, and then I have some modules, okay, with some functionality, okay? Pretty typical VB6 application. Now, you know, let's take the Visual Basic Upgrade Companion, which is one of our products, and here I have it set up so that, actually, let me do this again. You know, so I can run the Visual Basic Upgrade Companion, and what I have to do is that I have to create a new solution. I have to point it to the right directory. Okay. And then, you know, it's gonna take a quick look at all the references that are in there. So in case you're missing a reference, you know, you better go and get it. Because, you know, these tools, they need to really understand all the implications that your application has on the rest of the code. Once you have all the references, then you also have to set up a bunch of options. And you can decide, you know, how am I going to convert the database connectivity? You know, what am I going to do with the DAO, with RDO? I mean, you were probably not prepared to hear those terms in 2013, right, at a tech ed. But, you know, there are still tons and tons of applications running this. And these are applications that want to be liberated, and they want to go to the web. So you choose a bunch of options, you confirm the options, and then you're ready for upgrading. We don't have time for an upgrade right now. I'm actually running a little bit late already. But let me show you the results of these conversions. So here is the same application that we had before, now converted to .NET. And you know, the amount of automation that you can achieve is very, very high. Typically above 90-95%. If you look at the screens here, for instance, you know, here is a screen that is converted, and if we run this application, and especially if we put it side by side with the original VB6 one, right? So you know, it's hard to decide which one is which. You know, you have managed customers, and you have the customers application here, and it runs, right? You can go again, you know, to the orders. You can create an invoice. You know, you pick, you filter, etc. Right. So the application runs exactly in the same way. But something that is even more interesting is when you look at the code. Here you have code that is completely maintainable. Okay, this is pure .NET code opened up in Visual Studio. You know, there is no runtime. There's nothing, you know. You can just take this, and the application is now completely in .NET and ready to be evolved by your team, you know, by standard .NET programmers moving forward, okay? And, you know, we can look at some of the modules, for instance, and you can see, you know, this is just .NET code. You can see some messages like this upgrade warning, you know, that have also links, you know, to help you solve the issues when doing the conversion. Now, you know, and again, you know, I'm a little bit late, but once you're in .NET, you can also take, you now have a .NET desktop application, okay? This is a normal client-server application, and you want to move it to the web. So what do you have to do? You have to, first of all, you have to separate UI from business logic. You have to make sure that the UI now runs in a browser, and that the business logic continues to run on the server. And this is exactly what I'm going to show you here. You know, I'm going to show you now the same application. On the web. Okay? And again, this goes through a similar process as the one I showed you before. You know, when you take the migration tool and you convert the application, and it gets up to a point where you have to do some manual touch-ups, and then you can make it run in .NET. Let me just, you know, show it to you here. And this is now an application in HTML5, full HTML5. And again, you know, I can go here, I can go to manage customers, and look at something interesting here. So first of all, it's now a web application, so it has been converted so that it is now multi-user and multi-tenant, which is very, very important. And this is all done automatically, which is the most interesting part. You have now, for instance, you know, it looks at your users and it tells you who they are. And also, if you look at the form, it's not exactly the same as before. But why? It's because, I mean, we try to strip all of the styling information from the application. And then we just use CSS styling in HTML5, you know, to give it a new look, a new face. But it's basically the same application as before. You know, you can even go here and just look at the about. You know, and you have pop-up windows and everything. Okay. And again, if you look at the code, which is even more interesting, then, you know, for instance, here you see that there are the core, which is all the business logic, and the website. And we are actually using model view view model pattern to do the transformation. So we create a view model in between so that the UI, the HTML UI, connects to the view model, and the view model connects back to the business logic on the server. Okay, and we can sit down and analyze this source code for a long time. But for instance, you know, let's just pick this customer screen again, and you know, we can even put it in split. And again, the interesting part, and of course, you know, the style is not applied there. But I mean, the interesting part is that again, it's fully maintainable HTML code following a standard model view view model pattern that was converted from your original .NET application. And this is, you know, I think it's pretty cool, isn't it? So again, you know, we've been doing this for over 20 years. You know, lots of, you know, large customers, enterprise, ISVs, also global SIs, you know, getting technology to help their customers do projects. And underneath, you know, we have a lot of technology. You know, some of it is shared with compilers. When you parse code, you generate abstract syntax trees, and then you start to manipulate them. But it's not like a compiler because you make sure that you want to maintain the same level of abstraction as before. You know, normally when you compile, you go down with terms of level of abstraction, and so nobody understands it anymore. But I mean, if you maintain the same level of abstractions, then you get an application that can be evolved. So this is just to let you know that there is hope for our little application that we discussed at the beginning, and it can be transformed, and we can really inject new life into it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Federico. So now let me introduce you Samarin, Stephanie, and Anuk. Samarin, they do have a great solution for reusing your C# code in other devices like iOS and Android. And well, they will tell you a summary in a moment. Thanks a lot.
It will be significantly easier for me to speak. Thank you very much, Cesar. Thank you. So, Xamarin, all you need to know about Xamarin in less than 15 minutes, I promise. I'll be really, really crisp. Before we start, I'd love to hear who in the room, and please show me your hand, who in the room has heard the word Xamarin before? Nice. Very nice. We've done a good job, clearly. Absolutely. So who in the room, again, the hand, knows exactly what we do? Wonderful. Well, that otherwise we could just have left.
Yeah.
And that's would have been nice also. Very nice. So let's get started very quickly. Before we dive into details, Xamarin in numbers. We actually are only 2 years old as a company, but we already have more than 320,000 registered developers, more than 16,000 paying customers, in over 70 countries, and right now we're adding on average an additional 30,000 developers every single month. So we really are witnessing an explosive growth, honestly unlike anything I've ever seen in a software company. And what's interesting is that over 60% of our revenue is already coming from countries outside the US. So we're a very international company in such an early stage. I would think that's quite interesting. My name is Stephanie Schatz. I'm the VP of Sales and Customer Success at Xamarin. And with me on stage is Anush Bhatia. Very nice, thank you. He's a technical key account manager on my team in San Francisco, but actually also an experienced mobile engineer who is going to talk to you as well. So the question is, explosive growth, why? If you look at it closely, we're really the only technology out there that allows you to write native cross-platform mobile applications using C#. So we expose 100% of the native APIs for Windows, iOS, and Android. It's 100% native. At the same time, you write all of your code in C#. And the nicest thing about this is that you can actually do that using what probably a lot of developers would say is the best IDE in the world, Visual Studio, to do so. So you can actually write Windows, iOS, and Android applications within Visual Studio, which a lot of people seem to really like. So who are our customers today? Our customers are companies of all sizes, small, medium, large, Fortune 500 companies, and across all industries, really. Companies such as Kimberly-Clark, National Instruments, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And the mobile applications that our customers write using Xamarin, they really cover all types of use cases. So typical enterprise applications such as mobile CRM, field service applications, but then also consumer-facing applications. An example where people would use the app to do their grocery shopping on their mobile phone or on their tablet. So really all companies, all sizes, all industries. And we do work closely with a lot of the consulting and implementation companies, global consulting companies such as Cognizant and Avanade, but also with a lot of local companies, consulting companies, such as RBA Consulting, for example. So, where's the Kimberly-Clark? We had an example for an app in here. That's okay. Can you find the slide, you think?
Yeah, let's do that.
I had a beautiful app screenshot here that I wanted to show you.
I can do that for you.
Nice. Sweet. So here you can see, this is really an example for a gorgeous looking enterprise app. A partner of ours, a company called Bluetooth in Atlanta, has built this app for Kimberly-Clark. It's a mobile CRM solution. That means the sales reps use this app to visit their customers on site. And what you can see, it has a revolutionary 3D user interface. So it's a powerful visualization of the products, of the customer's requirements. And it has a couple of benefits, obviously, because first of all, it's fun for the sales rep to use. It makes him look really good when he talks to his customer. So it has a ridiculously high adoption rate within the user base, so that makes for a very successful mobile project. And secondly, obviously, it's a very strong and powerful, sophisticated sales presentation to the customer. The app is fully integrated into Kimberly-Clark's content management system, as well as into their mobile, into their CRM backend, which is, in their case, actually Salesforce. Very nice. Let's see what's on. Now I think we go back to the original. Yep. Very nice. So the question is, how does this work? The way this works is, very simply put, you split the back end from the front end. You share between 60 and 90% of your code across the different platforms. And at the same time, you have the possibility to write a beautiful platform-specific interface for Windows, for iOS, for Android, which allows you to actually render the nuances of each device, but also make use of the device-specific capabilities, such as, for example, the camera and the GPS. So summarizing this, there is really nothing that you can do in Objective-C or Java that you couldn't do with Xamarin in C#. It really opens up the full spectrum of native mobile application development, which is kind of awesome. Very good. I think at this point, I'll hand over to my colleague, Anush Bhatia, and he will tell you some more about Xamarin from a developer's perspective.
Yeah, thanks so much, Stephanie. Stephanie mentioned my name is Anush. I'm a key account manager working on some of our most important customers, some of our most important brands. As some of you know, we just had our first user conference. And as part of that user conference, we trained over 400 developers in Xamarin across the breadth of C# on iOS, Android, Windows, phone, tablet. And it was a really exciting experience, except the one thing that I particularly struck out from that conversation was a one-on-one I had with somebody who was an indie guy building a mobile app. And he was working on the Surface tablet and the iPad, and he was struggling with bringing this web app to the device. And he said, without Xamarin, I would have never been able to deliver this app to my customer. Without Xamarin, delivering a rich media experience on these tablets would have been impossible for me if I had to learn three separate languages and maintain three separate code bases. And it really follows suit that customers expect from developers the code that they create has to be native. It has to leverage native UIs. It has to follow the panorama or pivot pattern. It has to have nice scrollable list views. And it's important to note that with Xamarin, you can create a fully native UI, create an experience that your users would be fanatics about. And it really makes sense to understand that, there's nothing an Objective-C or Java developer that sort of bangs his head against the desk worrying about these little problems can do that you can't do in Xamarin. which means that you can have a multi-thousand item list view and scroll through it very nicely, or have nice graphics interactions, or create a driving directions app that has a polyline overlay, or just render nice grid views and charts that are totally interactive. You know, it's really important to note that with Xamarin, you can create a first-class user experience that shares 75 to 95% of your code, but still gets you a really great user experience. And then, you know, that sort of explains the user experience story, but, you know, a majority of the people in the room are probably developers. And what matters to you is not just the development environment, but the holistic developer experience. And with Xamarin, you don't have to compromise on your development experience. You know, plugging into TFS and having proper work items scheduled and gates, that's all nice, but the ability to sit in front of an IDE that is delightful is something that we probably take for granted, honestly. And I can say that because I dabbled in Xcode, and I dabbled in Eclipse, and I dabbled in IntelliJ, and I actually shipped some what I think are production apps servicing paramedics and firefighters at my previous job. And I can say, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, Visual Studio is the best IDE in the world. And it's because I felt the pain of transitioning between three separate IDEs, felt the pain of transitioning between three separate languages, three separate memory management semantics, three separate threading models. It is undeniably painful. And with Xamarin, I can stay all inside of Visual Studio. I can have a solution tree that manages all the relevant mobile application platforms out there. I can have an iOS application, an Android application, a core C# library that contains, you know, 75% of my business logic, and still come to Windows whenever I need to. And in fact, one of the things I'm most excited about is the Surface. The interactions that I can get on that and still have that inside of my source tree is just absolutely amazing. But more so than that, there are development managers out there who, you know, need to have your code in TFS, and not only that, but have gates and code coverage check-ins, and all this stuff can be done with Xamarin all inside of one IDE, without having to worry about the nuances of threading across the different platforms. You can create a task parallel extension that does exactly what you want, and you can do it in this IDE without any of the pain points of moving in between or context switching. And that's all great, you know. Everything sort of stays the same with Xamarin. You can write C#, you can do it inside of Visual Studio, you can bring your skills and your investments in .NET over the last decade to life on mobile. But something has really changed, and it has to do more so with testing. So you know, you've been writing unit tests to validate your business logic, and it's working quite well because you're just basically doing data control flow and making sure your view models are logging in appropriately. But I would almost say that the fragility of the mobile experience or the nuance of the mobile experience has elevated the developer's job to an extent that, you know, you really need to focus on the holistic user experience. You know, a couple of milliseconds on a premium device, on a premium experience, really matters. And so much so that if you're an enterprise and you have to make your users wait 30 seconds to download a data set source, they're just going to stop using it. They're going to go to their customer site. They're going to wait, make the customer wait for 30 seconds to load a list view. That just is not going to happen. So you need to test the fluidity of your application, not only with unit tests, but with UI automation tests. And with Xamarin, you can do all of this. You can upload your application to the cloud. You can upload your scripts to the cloud. And when we say cloud, we actually mean a lab of physical devices that are registering CPU-intensive performance hits or registering memory consumption over a graph for the entire lifecycle of the application. But not only that, you know, you can find out what your app looks like on hundreds of devices out there. So, you know, device fragmentation is a huge problem. And with Xamarin Test Cloud, you can test your app on thousands or hundreds of devices out there. And you know, whenever you want to know what your application looks like in landscape mode, you can literally just have the device on a gyro rotate, get a screenshot of the application, and it will register it in a web browser for you to review at a time that's appropriate for you. So it's a really interesting thing that's coming from Xamarin. It's in beta right now. So now, this is supposed to be a crash course in enterprise mobile application development. So what we're going to do is take this application and do some stuff with it. So this is a Windows RT, Windows Surface. This is a Windows RT application, and it's a field service application. And what it's designed to do is allow a serviceman, and in this case, let's say it's an air conditioner serviceman. It's quite cold in this room, so no service repair to be done today. So what he's going to do is go from assignment to assignment, and go in and repair air conditioners at specific sites. And he'll be able to view descriptions, log expenses, log items, and sync it to a local SQLite database. He'll be able to do it all across iOS, Android, and Windows, share 75% of the code, and still realize a native user experience that runs on Windows, Android, and iOS. But not only that, we need to make sure that this data gets up to the cloud. There's some accounting that needs to be done. So what we're going to do is also transition the data that we're accessing locally in SQLite and push that up to Windows, Azure, and mobile services. And what's great about this is when you build a Xamarin app, that 75% code share that we talked about represents data access, represents your business logic, represents your web services code, represents your services integration. It really is the meat of your application. It's the vast majority of effort that you put into a line of business application. And with Windows Azure Mobile Services, we get a unified access point for putting our data into SQL Azure. So we write one line of code to send this data up to Windows Azure, and there's no magic behind it. It is literally one line of code. So what we're doing is calling to Windows Azure, storing this data in SQL Azure, getting an authentication token back, and saying, hey, we're done. So let's jump right in and take a look at how this works. But before we do that, a lot of questions that come up when you integrate with a new piece or a new dependency is how do we compile this? How do we version this? How do we make sure that it's relevant to our workflow as a developer? And with the Xamarin Component Store, you have this curated ecosystem that we brought to the forefront where you can go and explore different components, whether it be a JSON library or a charting control, where you can interact with complex graphs or a nice grid view control that you can just plug and play in your application and get functionality quickly and easily without having to worry about who's versioning what or where it's coming from or whether it's actually a good library. We curate this entire ecosystem for you so you only get the best of class components that enter into your mobile app. So with that, let's put the rubber to the road and see what we can do inside of Visual Studio. So here we are. You notice on the right-hand side of the screen, we've got a standard solution tree. We've got a core, a library, a C# library, and what that represents is the 75% of business logic. You'll notice that we have view models, we have data models. So in the data model, we have a large list of data objects that we're going to persist to SQLite. We have a database implementation that's going to manage all this for us, so a public, a static database class. But not only that, we're using proper best practices for our architecture. We're using MVVM to construct view models that live in the shared code that can talk to the UI for each respective platform. So let's jump into the Windows app and see what it looks like. So here we are. We've got a standard login screen. And again, this is a proper modern Windows RT application that runs quite nicely. You'll notice that I get full interaction. I get nice panoramic list view here. So we're going to go to Xamarin. Let's say our air conditioner is broken. We're actually in downtown San Francisco. If you guys are coming to build, feel free to drop us a note. We'd love to have you and chat with you. We're throwing a big party. We'd love to have you there. So we're in San Francisco, and I'm going to fix Xamarin's air conditioner. But to do that, I need to go in and do some stuff first. So it seems somebody's already gone in and added a power cell to it, used a flux capacitor to, I guess, soup it up or something, and that maybe screwed it up. We're going to go and fix it by, let's say, adding a PVC pipe. I don't know why that's going to fix it. But a Jolt Cell Mark I, that sounds like it'll fix it. So let's add that to the list, and let's add some hours to install. So you'll notice that we're using the native paradigms to bring a modal screen to the, from the right and add it here. So we've added this all to a SQLite database, but we need to persist it to the web server. So let me go in here and finish out my assignment. So I can quickly add a signature here on this canvas. And then when I hit complete, what's actually going to happen is that I can persist this data up to Windows Azure. So now once I hit the complete button, we've actually persisted this to SQL Azure on the server. All in the back end, and let's take a look at how that works. So here in this here in the confirmations page, basically the page that represents the screen we were just on, I have a click event handler, public async void item on item click, and what this does is register the event to save out the assignment to the screen. So it's basically saved all my work. And here I have this one line of code that sends my data up to SQL Azure. So again, this is actually contained in the field service core example, but this Azure client is something that I've constructed to make it easy for me to send stuff up to the server. All I do is say, hey, I want to get this object of the assignment, and I want to insert my current assignment into the server. So basically, I want to take this record and I want to insert it into the cloud. And that's all it took for me to get my data persistence up to the cloud all in one button. But let's take a look at how it works on iOS. So I'm going to stop debugging. Now let me make the iOS project the startup project and change my target from a mixed platform to the iPhone simulator. In this case, what we're going to do is show an iPad. And what's actually happening here is we're compiling the application inside of Visual Studio and pushing it to the native iPhone simulator. So everything you see here is completely native, from the UI controls to the shared business logic, whether you control a button or whether you have an HTTP web request. Everything is calling down to C functions and running natively in each platform, respectively. So here we have the login screen, and let me rotate. And you know it's native because when it rotates, it actually feels like an Objective-C application would rotate, and that's great. So let me demo. Let me log in here. And you'll notice that I've got a breakpoint, meaning that I can debug the entire Objective-C or the entire iOS application right inside of Visual Studio. So I can get information about the frame, the text that's in here. Obviously, it's not a super secure password because it's demo. So we can get full debugging all inside of our iOS application. So I hit the login button, and I stopped here. So let me continue. And we get the same exact experience inside the iPad simulator, all inside of Visual Studio. So let's go to Xamarin's location. Let me get some items. And let's soup up this air conditioner with a flux capacitor, even though it probably won't work. Let's log some expenses. I got jambalaya. We are here in New Orleans, so that's food. I spent $20. It's a very expensive bowl of jambalaya. And let me go to the confirmation screen. And this is where all the magic happens. So let me add a signature noting that I've finished my work. And this is actually another component that exists in the Xamarin Component Store. You can plug and play functionality into your app. Let me hit save. It renders the bitmap inside the assignment object, inside my iOS application. And when I hit complete, it says, yes, are you sure? And you'll notice that Visual Studio said, hey, there was some background operations that happened. And the background operations that happened were actually in this complete cell class. So when the button was hit, there was a complete event handler fired against it. And after we've done all the view model stuff and saved the assignment asynchronously to disk, what we're going to do is down here, we're going to tell Azure, hey, I need an instance of the client. I need to get the object that represents the assignment. And I want to insert it asynchronously into SQL Azure through the Azure Mobile Services middle tier. And all we did was basically take an assignment object, get it from the database, persist it to the database, and then send it up to Azure all within one button click asynchronously. So we got a really great UI. We're able to render native UI controls and still got a best-of-class experience all while sharing 75% of the code, the view models, the data models for all platforms, iOS, Android, Windows. And it was all easy because I did it all inside of Visual Studio.
Very, very nice. So this was a pretty solid demo. Thank you very much, Anush.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Did you guys like that? I'd like to see hands. Yes, 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 yes. Excellent. So if you guys have any questions, please don't hesitate to send us an email. Contact us on Twitter. We have a booth here, 2022 is our booth number. Please come see us tonight or tomorrow. We're here the whole week. We'd love to talk to you guys. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll hand over back to Cesar.
Thank you, guys. So last but not least, we have Citrix and Brian to explain us the solutions they've got for modernizing Windows applications. Do you have it? So Bruce, ready?
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I think we're standing between you and beers, so hopefully this will go pretty well here. My name is Bruce France, and I work in a team in Citrix called Citrix Labs. We're actually an applied research team within Citrix. It's looking out over the technology horizon a little bit, a couple years ahead of our product groups. And we've been looking at the mobile space for a while and some of the challenges organizations have with mobility. Let me borrow from Xamarin. How many of you heard of Citrix? Hands? Most of you. How many of you use Citrix in your organizations? Quite a few. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is a little bit Citrix-focused and application virtualization focused. Citrix is a pretty big company now. It's actually evolved quite a bit since I've been in the company for 8 years. It's over 20 years old. It's been a key Microsoft partner for a number of years in the application virtualization space. We've expanded into cloud networking, obviously, public clouds, and many of you probably heard of Citrix through all the ads, at least in the U.S., on GoToMeeting. All the cable news channels have a lot there. But let's quickly move on here and talk a little bit about what's happening with this mobile world and what's actually some of the challenges that are going on. We're starting to see, well, we've seen it for a while now, more and more users wanting to access their Windows applications from mobile devices. And these corporate applications will oftentimes have very sensitive data associated with them. These touch-based mobile devices are expanding in terms of diversity. I was fortunate to pick up a Surface RT yesterday. Took 2.5 hours in the line. My feet hurt like crazy, but it was worth it. It was fantastically worth it. Thousands of business Windows applications out there. Oftentimes, they're custom-written applications within an organization. Another show of hands, how many have custom Windows applications in your organization and development teams? I'm glad to see that, because I think this solution could be of interest to you then. These business applications are expecting mouse, keyboard, large screen to a lot of real estate to display very complex user interfaces. However, when we look at these two overlapping circles, the usability of those Windows applications that are remoted, executing in the data center and remoted out to a mobile device aren't so usable. The other thing is there's a lot of going on in terms of BYOD. Another show of hands, how many are facing some of those challenges in your organization in terms of people wanting to access corporate data from their own device? A few out there still there. A lot of security issues, compliance issues associated with that. So what we did is we've developed a mobile SDK for Windows applications that's really focused on virtualized applications running in the data center on Zen App or Zen Desktop. And I'll talk a little bit about some terminology. What this SDK does is enables building a touch-friendly Windows application with standard Windows tools, Visual Studio. We've built some APIs in there, over 100 mobility-focused APIs that allow a Windows application to access some of the mobile device capability. And I'll be talking about some of those APIs in a little more detail in a few moments. And also, be able to detect what that endpoint device is, what platform it is, what the screen size is, the pixel density, and so forth. Just a little bit of stage set here. Many of you will know this already, but in terms of application and desktop virtualization, Terminal Services has been around for years. Actually, Citrix worked very closely in the early days with Microsoft around Terminal Services. So we have a commercial product around Terminal Services called Zen App and Zen Desktop. And that actually runs, it's a server that runs in the data center, and an application is hosted on that, or a full Windows desktop, and it's remoted out to an endpoint device. That endpoint device could be a thin client, it could be a Windows PC, it could be a Macintosh, and it could be any number of mobile devices, touch-based mobile devices we're seeing in the market today, whether it's iOS, whether it's Android, or WinPhone, or WinRT. The third piece of it is a secure protocol connecting that client device and the servers. It used to be called ICA, Independent Computer Architecture, old IBM term, came out of the people who really started Citrix a number of years ago. Our crackerjack marketing people now call that HDX for high definition experience. But it's a secure, highly optimized protocol that can deliver pixels across low latency networks with high performance. So what we did with this SDK was create some new virtual channels in that HDX protocol, HDX protocol, which allow communication between the client and the application executing on the server in the data center. And two of them are actually built in now to our server and client-side technologies. So when a user touches into a text entry field, the on-screen keyboard is automatically going to pop up. So if it's an iOS device, it's going to pop up as an iOS. If it's a WinRT, it'll be a WinRT device. Similarly, when the user wants to use a combo box or a list box, the Windows application knows that, and it's going to trigger that on-device user interface. The whole idea here is to make that remoted hosted Windows application feel more like a native application, but keep all that data secure back in the data center. Now, what we did was we added additional API as well to be able to access some of the other capabilities on the device. So a Windows application can trigger an SMS message or a phone call. It can also use the camera, and I'll show you a demo in a little bit that shows the camera being used to capture a full motion video. The other piece we added is the ability to access the GPS radio, so we can understand what the geolocation of that device is. Now, clearly, there are some privacy issues in certain jurisdictions around that. So when that particular API is used, we actually pop up from the receiver side, the client side, we pop up a consent form or a consent notice that the user has to consent with that. We can also put that into a different virtual channel, a second virtual channel alone, so we can shut that off in certain jurisdictions that would disallow use of that privacy information. So some, as I said, there are over 100 API. In terms of capture, I talked a little bit about capturing full motion video with the device camera, could be a still picture, and also an audio clip as well. And this has some interesting implications in terms of use with an electronic medical records application. I'll show you a demo a little bit. Device properties, so the MAC address, the IP address, the serial number of that device can be captured then, sent back to the server, and you could imagine some geofencing around some of that information and so forth. Events. Typically, a Windows application isn't expecting its screen to be turned in portrait or landscape mode and flipped around. And so knowing that event has taken place and sending the pixels out appropriately for that. We talked about the keyboard and the location. Different mobile devices have different behaviors for buttons. For example, the back button on an Android device is going to march through the hierarchy of an application. And so we're able to detect that button, and the developer who's using this SDK can then have that button behave appropriately. Talked a little bit about the display, but in terms of the display, the API can detect what the screen size is, whether it's a 10-inch tablet, a 7-inch tablet, a 5-inch smartphone. Also the pixel density, the DPI, so the pixels can be delivered out in an appropriate way. I think I talked about messages using the phone and SMS before. So what I want to do now is talk a little bit about the application development workflow, a little bit about the system requirements, both on the development machine but also the production machine where this would be. I'll talk a little bit about the runtime environment, and then the sort of workflow around bug, build, debug, and deployment. So the system requirements are pretty straight ahead here. We have a development machine that's either Windows 7 or 8, X64, Visual Studio 2010 or 2012, and we'll be keeping up with the, we heard in the keynote some advances on Visual Studio 2012, and we'll be keeping up with that. The mobile SDK itself has all the binaries, the libraries, the include files associated with actually very quickly getting you up to speed and using this SDK. We've also built an emulator as a part of the SDK that allows you to test and debug an application you're writing right in Visual Studio, and I'll show you a screenshot and talk about that a little bit more. So that's sort of the development piece of it. In production testing, you don't need all that whole list. You just need either one of the top three there to actually go out and production test and then deploy an application written with this SDK on the server side. And on the client side, the latest receiver for Android, iOS, WinRTE, but we're also working on WinPhone coming soon as well. There's very extensive documentation and rapid start videos out on the website. It's at citrix.com/mobility SDK. Code samples, and the code samples and examples out there are free for developers to use. You can go out there, take those and incorporate that right into the application you're developing. So let's talk a little bit about the runtime environment here. If we look at the client side, we've got the receiver core. Again, we call our client software receiver, and we have receivers for many, many endpoints, thin clients, Windows PCs, WinRT, iOS, Android, so forth. So that end client is fairly ubiquitous in the endpoints it's covering. Under that is some mobile device services that actually are allowing the receiver to interact with the various capabilities of that mobile device we talked about with the APIs. On the server side, we're actually leveraging that mobile services runtime environment with the receiver via the HDX protocol you see across the middle there. Above that, we have the basically the libraries for both C and C++ and .NET languages that are able to you can use to write these particular applications. And above that, we have the kinds of applications you might write. So they could be C, C++ apps, could be .NET apps. The one on the right in blue there, hosted mobile app, what we did, that was sort of the petri dish out of which this particular SDK grew. What we thought about a couple years ago is, what if we replaced the Outlook client, the fat Outlook client that was typically hosted on XenApp in the data center, with a touch-friendly application and communicate with the Exchange server through the Exchange server, Exchange Web Services APIs. And so that hosted mobile application we're actually going to have in beta test and is going to be a product that we're going to be shipping. But that actually leverages this SDK quite closely. Moving on quickly, I talked about this emulator. Basically, what it's doing is emulating a mobile device, and there's some templates for iOS, for Android, WinRT that come with it. You can also support your own custom template as well. What this does is allows you within Visual Studio to run the application, bring the emulator up, which will happen when you run the application, and it'll allow you to test the functionality of that application, whether it's the rotation of the screen, accessing the camera, accessing other device capability without having that whole infrastructure set up to test the application that you've written. In terms of the development phase, it's fairly standard. You develop the application in Visual Studio. Basically, you start testing it. The emulator helps you debug that application without a whole infrastructure set up. And once that you've been able to get that application to the state you want, then you go through a build and deployment flow as well. Build the application in Visual Studio. In this example, we're just showing a single .exe file. It would then be copied over to the Zen app or Zen desktop server, and then the Citrix App Center would be used to publish that application then to Zen app to be able to be available to the end users with either accessing it from any number of mobile devices we might talk about. Now, I want to talk about one of our partners, and I noticed both Xamarin and Mobilize.net had Avanade as a partner, and of course Avanade is a great partner of Microsoft as well. So we've worked actually really closely with Avanade with this SDK, and they've developed a couple of applications associated with it. The one I want to show you today is a electronic medical records application that Avanade developed, and these kind of applications in the highly regulated industries where there's a lot of compliance issues around keeping that data secure in the data center. Over here, I'm going to come back here so I can point some. That's a very critical piece of it. So typically, a medical professional was accessing an EMR application, that patient data, on a fat Windows application from a desktop with a large screen and a laptop and so forth. Over the last several years, more and more of those physicians and medical professionals have been wanting to access those applications from mobile devices. As we talked about at the beginning of the talk here, it's not very usable. So what Avanade did was start to develop a EMR mobile-friendly application. And because they're such a close Microsoft partner, they decided we're going to use a single UI, so we're going to use the WinRT paradigm for the UI for this particular application. And they've used the SDK in a number of ways, and I'll show you the demo in a moment, but you'll notice here that they're able to, the developer built in the smarts in the application to detect what the mobile device was, whether it's a tablet or a smartphone, and built in a layout so that that appropriate layout will be delivered to the device because it has been detected. And the physician could actually roam across devices and it'll automatically change. So it's the same application built once, maintained once, delivered to multiple form factors. While this particular screenshot is showing a Samsung device, it could be an iOS device or an RT device as well. And just keep in mind, this application is executing back here in the data center, and only the pixels are traveling out there. So let me show you the video, and I'll try to narrate this as we go along here. So basically, we're starting up the application from receiver on an Android tablet. We're going to actually audit the location. We're granting the user's granting permission to use the GPS location. Our developers for this are in Australia, Sydney, Australia, so that's why you saw Sydney there. You see the front screen, the dashboard here. We're going to drill down into some patient data. You can see we have a list of several patients on here. Drill into that a little bit. We're going to take a little closer look at Mr. Hill. We can see we have some complaint history, some x-ray images associated here. The next thing we're going to do is this gentleman had an operation on his arm, and so we're going to take a video of that person's arm. He's starting up the video player right now. You can see he's taking a picture of the arm and seeing what's happening. Now we've stopped the video, and we're going to save it and then play it. Now, all this is being triggered from the data center, and we can see it being played now. And the next step will be to enter a label for this particular video. And you saw the keyboard pop up there. The label post-op is entered. Save it back up, so that video is being saved with all the other patient data for that particular patient back up in the data center, secure, fully fulfilling the compliance requirements that are needed there. A lot of organizations are very worried about security, particularly the highly regulated ones. There are a number of organizations we work with in the government that are concerned about having any data cached out on an easily lost, stolen, or device. A lot of personal devices, they don't want any data out on it. Many organizations are facing that same issue. So what are the drivers here? Why would you want to do this? Data security, compliance, and governance are some of the main ones. This is not perfect for every solution. It's one arrow in the quiver for developers and organizations, obviously. Xamarin and Mobilize.net or others, obviously. Device independence, though. The ability to have one application that you develop with standard Windows tools, being able to access mobile device capabilities, leveraging the existing Citrix and Windows infrastructure you have, that's a huge win for many kinds of line of business applications. And so that's kind of where we've come to with this piece here. Using your Windows development skills, using the standard Windows tools that you do already, Visual Basic is a key piece. There's a lot of information out on the web here, and so love to have you have a look at that, and you can reach me at bruce.franson@citrix.com. Also, there's a developer forum. The guys who have developed this SDK are monitoring it every day, so within 24 hours, you'll have an answer to any question you ask. Just curious, have any of you looked at this SDK before, or is this all new to you? A couple of you have? Anybody developed an application with it yet? Okay, well, that's all I have. Thank you very much for your attention today. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Bruce. So we do have like a few minutes for QA, so you want to come up, Xamarin and Mobilize. Yeah, can you use the mic, please? Yeah, over.
Do you know where it is?
Hello.
I wasn't.
Hello.
There. That's what I was looking for.
I'm Moses. The question is for the Xamarin guy. Hello. Xamarin. Okay, I want to ask this question concerning the development for the Xamarin for iOS. How is it not possible that you can develop for the iOS on the Windows platform? Isn't a normal PC?
So there's two things that are happening. One is we're compiling the IL inside of Visual Studio, and we're taking that C# code and sending it over a wire to a Mac. So one of the things that you do need, even if you're sitting in front of Visual Studio, is a Mac computer to compile the code to the iOS-specific binary. So most of our developers actually have a multi-screen Windows setup, so two screens with Visual Studio running a fully featured, powerful environment and a tiny little Mac Mini or a MacBook Air that runs the code for you on the iOS side. So they have an iOS device and a Surface RT sitting side by side doing cross-platform development all from Visual Studio. But there's no way around getting the proper hardware for the development environment that you need. Just like if you were developing for WPF, you need an environment that is specific to that platform. Yeah, exactly. Invariably, you would need the proper development tools for the environment that you're building for. Yeah.
Yeah. So we obviously have a close partnership with Apple as well, and I think Apple is very clear in their terms of business that if you develop for iOS, you're required to have a Mac. And that's very important for us that we actually state and underline that. That's the fact.
So my question is for Xamarin also. For those of us who have MSDN licenses, but also kind of run our own little shops on the side. Are there any plans for the indie plan to let you use Visual Studio?
Send me an email.
Any other question?
Are there any plans on releasing your product for VB? Instead of C#, VB.net.
So I can answer that just because it's recorded. So one of the things that we're doing for BB customers is we're releasing PCL support. So you can put your code inside of a PCL, your BB code, and use that PCL inside of Xamarin. So come talk to me at the booth. I think it's 2022, and we can show off some of the new things that we're coming out with PCL support. I think it's going to make a lot of developers' lives much easier if they can throw their code into PCL and consume it inside of a Xamarin application. The only thing that you won't get is debuggability, because the debugger has to know about a specific line and has to plug into the runtime to do it. But if you compile your VB.NET code, you'll get proper signatures for debugging. So you know, if you output something from VB to standard out, you can debug your code that way. There are cross-compiler tools, but we're going to have some PCL love for you very soon.
Any other? Okay, so thanks a lot for your attention.